a Rayo Original Podcast.
Hey guys, before we start this episode, I just want to remind you that I am now recording solo episodes every week, and I have been so delighted to find out that 80% of you who listen to the main episodes are also tuning in to the bonus episodes. I can't believe it. I'm so happy to hear that, and I've been loving recording them. Every week, I answer one question to help you on your self-development and manifesting journeys. We release one every single Thursday, and if you haven't listened yet, there's loads to go through. So I'll see you there. Now, back to the episode. Content warning, this episode discusses themes of drug use, abuse, and mental health issues that some viewers may find upsetting.
I saw these pictures of myself and I was like, wait, I look hot. Like, this is so much more fun than modeling.
And did it make you regret having done OnlyFans at the time?
I regretted it because I kind of thought, wait, have I just ruined my life?
And it was at like 11 a.m. and I was on my own in the bathroom doing coke. And I was like, I'm really fucking lost here.
I'm like gonna cry. They've saved my life. I didn't think like there was any possibility of me like making it out of like that narrative of myself.
I was in such darkness that I knew that the only way out was forward. Like, I had to change my life.
Life will be kind to you, but you have to be kind to yourself first. But I'm so happy now. I'm in such a good place. It's kind of like freeing to actually hit rock bottom.
Oh my God, yeah.
Yeah, you're like, well, this is it.
Absolutely. I'm here. Like, I got nothing to lose. Talk to me about the face tattoo. Hello and welcome back to Rise with Roxy. What happens when the world hands you an identity before you've even figured out who you are? Today's guest was scouted at 13, labeled the next Kate Moss before she hit 18, and thrown into a life of comparison, expectation, and pressure. But behind the glamour was a young woman in deep pain, struggling with body image, people-pleasing, addiction, and the desire to be loved for who she really is. Today's guest is Lottie Moss, and in this conversation, we explore what it looks like to take your power back, to set boundaries, and to start again. This is for anyone who's ever felt the need to shrink themselves, to perform for others, or to be perfect in order to be loved. Lottie's story is one of unlearning, rebuilding, and rising. Lottie, welcome to Rise with Roxy.
Oh my God, I'm so excited to be here.
I haven't seen you for so long.
I mean, it's been a very long time. You were pregnant the last time I saw you.
We were just kind of saying before we started recording that is that when we first met at an after party?
We kind of had got along, I think, like all night, if I vaguely remember. And then,
and
then I remember you went to the bathroom and I feel like you were upset about something.
Probably.
And I came and sat with you in the bathroom. And it's funny, like when I was reading your book, like at the beginning when you were saying like you hit like rock bottom at 27. And I think it was just a couple years before that, before you were 27. And I remember being in the bathroom with you and like talking to you about mental health and stuff. And you were really struggling at that point.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I can remember a lot of people being in my house and someone turned up with like 20 extra people in my house and you helped me get rid of everybody.
Yeah.
I cannot believe you were 18.
Yes, 18 years old.
That is so young.
Because I remember like sitting there while you were like kind of like upset about this thing and I was like, well, I'm having a great time. Like, it just hadn't hit me yet. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then now I'm 27. I'm like, well, you know, I've had those sort of 25 to 27 years. I'm like, oh, I get it now. It makes so much sense, you know?
So I have so much I want to talk to you about. And
I'm ready for it because I actually texted you recently being like, I need to talk to you. Like, I'm feeling all the feels at this age.
Okay, amazing. You know, I think I want to start by saying that I have always just thought you were so lovely and you're such a good energy. And I think that having had a life like yours, I can imagine people have misunderstood you often. And I want this to be a real opportunity for everybody to see you for who you are. You obviously grew up with a incredibly famous sister, Kate Moss. How is it growing up with somebody that was so globally known and recognized and so celebrated for the way that she looked? And how did that impact your self-image at a young age?
It's funny because when I talk to people about having like a famous sister, first of all, was like I thought it was normal. And so I remember my mum, the first time I sort of realized she was famous, because obviously I'd met her and things like that when I was younger, but I was too young to sort of comprehend the whole fame situation. You don't really know when you're a child, you don't really know what that means. And I remember the first sort of few times I kind of realized my mum would get magazines out and she'd go, look, that's Kate. That's your sister. And I was like, okay, cool. Like, and from then I thought everyone's sister was in a magazine. So I didn't think that was like any different. And then, you know, we started going, you know, out with her and going for dinners and stuff. And then obviously there would be paparazzi. And this was at the time when there was no social media. I'm that old. And I remember like just seeing all these paparazzi. It was like, there'd be hundreds of them. And that's when I was like, oh, like, wow, she, okay, this is like, she's really famous. And then I think from when I was 13, when I was recognized at her wedding and kind of brought into the agency, and that's kind of when I was first in the papers and things like that, that was when things kicked off for me. And it was a lot. And I think I didn't quite realize how much she'd been putting up with for the last few years and things like that. And there were so many complications with having that kind of a person as a sister, like that obviously her being very thin and I'm quite curvy naturally, and, you know, being so young going into something like that, I had no idea what she'd been through. My sister never really kind of prepared me for it or spoke to me about it ever. And now I kind of realize like how hard it was for her.
In what ways?
Being always scrutinized at a young age, I think. I think it's a lot worse now with social media and things like that, that people can comment on it a lot more. But yeah, I mean, I didn't realize it was any different because I started so young and they would tell me to lose weight and be a certain size.
From when?
When I was 17, 18, right. That was when they would tell me the measurements, because I was naturally quite thin when I was younger. But obviously as I grew into be a woman, you know, my bum started to set in, and I sort of, you know, when you eat it, you can see on yourself more. And yeah, it was weird.
From the wedding, you get scouted.
Yeah.
You start modeling at 13. And are you at that point loving it, enjoying it? Does it feel exciting?
I mean, I was super excited, but I was so young that I didn't really know what it meant to be a model. Mm. I just thought, like, this is such a fun opportunity. Like, why would I turn this down? And I'd only seen the fun sides of it. I had obviously seen the tabloids saying things about my sister on drugs. And I'd seen a few things with my sister that I kind of recognized were signs of drug use. And I thought that that was so cool. Like, I had no idea that there was anything like deeper to it. So that's how I kind of got into it. As soon as I was 18, I moved to London and I was doing full-time modeling. Because before that, I was at school. I was just going at the weekends and things like that. So I was quite sheltered from that party life, because I couldn't really party because I had to go back to school. And then it was 18 when I moved to London that everything set in, and it was a paparazzi following me home. It was the partying all the time. Obviously, you remember, like, we partied together. And I was partying with older people as well, who were, you know, doing a lot more drugs than me and drinking a lot more than me, because they'd obviously been drinking for a lot longer than me. And so it just became normal. I went to fashion parties. People were doing drugs all the time. I was being offered drinks when I was, you know, 16, 17 anyway. So when I moved to London, it was like full force. And I had a boyfriend at the time who you remember, and he was a drug addict. And so it was like full force for me then. And I'd just seen all these, you know, all of this drug abuse kind of glamorized, you know, with like Lindsay Lohan and Paris Hilton. Like, oh my God, how iconic. Like, they were all in the car together, you know, Paris partying. Like, I'd kind of grown up on just that and seen that. And I'd never spoken to my sister about that. So I thought she was just having the time of her life.
Yeah.
Like, modeling, being super famous. I thought it was so glamorous being photographed. Like, when I was younger, I remember I would watch paparazzi videos on YouTube and think, oh my God, how cool having, you know, walking through and having the paparazzi just taking all the flashes and everything. It looks so glamorous from the outside. And then the invasion of privacy like started, and them popping out bushes at my flat, my first flat that I moved into, and just being, I remember being chased home one night and my friend was driving and he was trying to avoid them, and we were driving so fast. And it was just very different to what I thought it was going to be.
I think it's so true, because I totally agree that at that time, snorting lines of cocaine off a toilet seat felt glamorous.
It did.
You actually felt like you were doing something cool.
Yeah.
Which is insane now that you think about it.
I would be dancing on tables and I was like, yeah, like I really like, you know, when you see films or like Euphoria and they take drugs and they're like this.
Yeah.
Like, I'm like, that is not my experience with that.
Yeah, yeah.
It's more like goblins in a like cave, like kind of like everyone's like tweaking out and it's like
it's so true. But it is so normalized. And so
it really is. Yeah.
When does it stop being fun?
Do you know what? I think it was, I didn't even realize the transition of when it stopped being fun. It just, like, I mean, 18 was one of the most amazing years of my life. Like, I had the best time. I was modeling full time. I was like, you know, going to all these amazing parties. And it was still fun at this point because it was all new. I think like 19, 20, you kind of don't realize how bad you get. Like, at first, I didn't really have any problems with it or anything. Like, I'd do it, but I'd go to bed at like 3 or something, or like 2. It was more like my ex that kind of had the problem with it and the people around me I saw doing it more than me. I kind of just did it because everyone else was doing it, you know? And then I realized like I was quite miserable at work. I remember going to New York and I had my first panic attack. I was separated from my friends and I really missed my friends and my family. And I was with people that like, one, didn't really care about me. Two, didn't know me very well. You know, my agent was 35 years old or something. Like I was 18. Like I, you know, and it is weird being around people that, you know, they're just your work colleagues and they're people that you just speak to at events. And the fashion industry is funny because it is so fake. When you go to these parties, everyone's like, darling, mwah, mwah, like, you know, so good to see you. We have to do lunch soon. And then you never speak to them again until the next fashion party where they're doing the same. And I have come to realize about myself and accept about myself that I'm a very genuine person and I need genuine people around me. And I think that started to really get to me. And the only way to just kind of block my emotions and block being me was drugs and alcohol. And it was the only control I had over my life because everything else was controlled by my agency, my hair, my weight, my, you know, clothes. It, like, I had a stylist. I wasn't allowed to even go to the shops without being styled. I got told off for going to the Tesco's because I look really bad. And they took photos of me with like Tesco's bags and my hair up and in tracksuits. And I got like call from my agent. Oh my God, no, you need to be styled for even these things. So it just became a way, this was the only escape I had.
Right. So quite quickly, it starts really fun, exciting you. Then there's this like sense of real like control.
Yeah.
And you're like, okay, I kind of feel like I'm in.
I kind of didn't know why I was having these panic attacks. I didn't know why I was getting this anxiety. I didn't know why. And then like the depression hit.
Right.
It was like the same pattern of like using drugs and then coming back and then being really depressed and then using, you know, and then waking up sober and being like, oh, I'm fine now, you know.
How long did the depression last and how much of the depression do you think was just so linked? I mean, it's so hard to even say, but like so linked to the drug use. Because I mean, I've always struggled to understand, even in my own story, I'm like, how, you know, it's chicken egg. Like you're running from something, so you take drugs, but the drugs are causing such severe come downs.
Yeah.
And I think people that don't take drugs or haven't got any experience with coke probably, and but by the way, not everyone has those kind of like come downs that are to that level. So it's
met hard a lot of people that are like, oh, I'm fine, and I'm like, how?
Yeah. Wait, what do you think was the driving force? Do you think it was the drugs or the depression?
I think the depression was the driving force for the drugs. Like, I think I actually, when I went to rehab, I was like, I need to go to rehab. I have a drug problem. Back in 2023, and I went, and they, you know, I sat and spoke, we did the 28 days and they diagnosed me with like clinical depression. And they were like, you were taking drugs because you were depressed. And I always thought I was like depressed because I was taking drugs,
right.
You know?
Yeah.
But I think there were other factors as to why I was not happy in myself. I was, you know, undiagnosed for a long time with ADHD and I was not taking care of myself. I was not taking care of my mental health. I was around a lot of people that, you know, in situations that were like dark and not very nice people. And I was dating guys that were so, so horrible to me and just didn't treat me with any respect. And I think when you lose respect for yourself, that's like the trigger, isn't it? You know, because then you start to hate yourself and then that's depression, really.
When did the kind of pattern of toxic relationships begin?
Do you know what's funny? I have actually never really been in a good relationship with someone who's actually really like cared for me, loved me, shown me the same level of respect that I've showed them. And like still to this day. And it's funny, like I think, I mean, it started when I was a lot younger. Like I was about 15, 16 with my first like proper boyfriend. And I like fell in love. Obviously it was like puppy love, fell in love so hard. And I found out he broke up with me, and it was like the most depressing thing. He got back with his ex-girlfriend, and I was so devastated, obviously, because I thought we were getting married.
Mm. Well, you do, you know, when you're 15, age, you're
like,
yeah.
We're together forever.
Yeah.
I found out like a month later that he cheated on me in like the most vile way as well. Makes you feel so inadequate. And then I moved to London and I dated Alex from Made in Chelsea, and he was cheating the whole time. I've spoken about that before, and I think he's fine with me talking about it, I hope. But yeah, he cheated a lot. And then that was really devastating as well, because that was sort of my first proper, like adult love.
Yeah.
Then from then on, I just didn't know what like a normal, healthy, happy relationship was from that. Mm. I was so used to just fixing guys. And then from then on, it was, let's take the most damaged guy that I meet and let's fix him. And that pattern just continued until probably like 2 years ago.
Do you think have you always been a romantic? Like when you go into these relationships, do you go in like so full? Is each one a sort of like, I know this one is going to be right? Or do you?
No, I think for a long time when I was really depressed, I dated men who were as depressed as me, or as sort of into drugs as me and alcohol and wanted to party and forget about everything kind of thing. Like that's what I wanted to do, was just like not be here, like kind of just forget reality, you know? And so I wanted to date guys that were just as bad, you know? So I thought that if I did that, then I wouldn't have to fall in love and I wouldn't have to deal with, you know, I wouldn't have to deal with judgment. I wouldn't have to have anyone trying to help me, because it was like, they were worse than me. But obviously that didn't work, you know, it doesn't work that way.
So when does, because, I mean, you start out in the fashion world, you're modeling, you know, there's this kind of, correct me if I'm wrong, but people are really trying to get you to follow Kate's footsteps. But I remember you kind of making a decision that you didn't want to do that anymore, that you were kind of like going to find your own path. And I remember seeing you and being like, God, that's actually really impressive that you actually were like, no, I don't want to be in this world just because people say it's cool or the thing to do.
Yeah.
Why did you decide to kind of go in a different direction?
I've realized like I'm not a fashion girly. I think like I just was like, I don't fit in with these people. Like they care far more than me about the latest trends and this and that. And I love fashion. I love dressing up and stuff, but it's not that deep to me. It's not live or die. It's not the end of the world. Like, and for a lot of people, even still to this day, like getting into the fashion parties is like live or die. They will queue up for like 3 hours to get into a Burberry party, or oh my God, we have to go to like this party with this, these people are there, and they will do anything to like get into that crowd. I just didn't care. I was like, I want to be around people that I enjoy being around. Like all of my friends, people always come up to me and they go, I bet you have really famous friends. I'm like, well, my friends work like normal jobs. Like I just don't care. Like I want to be around people that I like, that like me, that want to be around me, that we have things in common. And that just, it was never important to me, honestly. And I just realized like, I was never going to get away from being Kate Moss's sister. I was never going to get away from that. Like, oh, she only got this job because she's Kate Moss's sister. But it's funny, like when I actually went out on my own and started doing like OnlyFans, obviously it was quite a jump from high fashion modeling with Karl Lagerfeld, you know what I mean? But I just thought, who cares? Like, who actually cares? Like, and I'm so liberal in the way that I just think naked bodies aren't a big deal.
Yeah.
I'm like, we're all naked. We're all here because of sex. Why is it a big deal to like do that? If you want to do that, like I find it weird that people want to be real estate agents. Like that to me is weird. I'm like, why would you want to go around and like sell houses to people? Like I find that the most boring job. But some people want to do it. I'm not going to sit there and like slag someone off for wanting to do something that they want to do.
Yes.
You know? But I think that really shocked people, and I just I was like, I just didn't think it was a big deal, but going away from that and being my own person was the best thing I ever did, But even when I did something that I wanted to do and, you know, kind of followed that thing of people saying, oh, she's only famous because she's Kate Moss's sister. She's only a model because she's Kate Moss's sister. When I went into doing something else, they were like, she should have stuck to it.
Yeah.
You know, she's not, you know. Well, I'm like, well, what do you want from me then?
Yeah,
you
know? Totally. Okay, let's talk about OnlyFans.
Yes.
Because when I found out, I was like, all here for it. Like, you do you. I heard you were making great money. I was like,
oh, hell yeah.
You know what? Fuck it. Great. And I really believe everyone should feel empowered to do whatever they want to do. I want to talk about why and how it came to be. Like, what was the kind of steps from where you were to actually doing it? And what does it actually entail?
Actually, it was right after COVID. And it was the first time I was allowed back in America after COVID, because obviously everyone had shut down. And I went to Mexico. I think it was for my birthday, actually. And I was meeting some friends there from America. They were meeting me from LA and I was meeting them from London. And we all went there, had a birthday time. It was great. And then my friend who'd come from LA, she was like, oh, I do this thing called like OnlyFans, whatever. And it was her boyfriend at the time who was running this, and a little bit dodgy, but she was like, it's so much fun. And so we kind of like took some fun pictures, you know, when we were on the trip in Mexico. And we were doing like little bikini pictures at first, just like having fun. And I saw these pictures of myself and I was like, wait, I look hot. Like, wait, tea. Like, and it kind of was just fun because I was seeing pictures of myself that I liked. For a long time in modeling, I was seeing a lot of pictures that I didn't have control over. I don't get control of what I wear, how I look. You know what I mean? It's all the magazine, all the brands. And I was just like, this is so much fun. And especially during COVID, there was no money because there was no modeling. So I was like, I need to step it up right now. Like, I need some money. And my friend was telling me how much she made. And I was like, oh my God.
How much was she making?
20,000, 30,000 she was making a month. Mm. And I was like, holy shit, this is insane. I heard about other girls as well, how much they were making, like millions and hundreds of thousands. And I was like, wait, like maybe I could do this. I've got followers. And we moved into this big house in Beverly Hills. And it was me in one room, my friend and her boyfriend in the other room. And it was this proper like art deco, proper Hollywood, like old Hollywood with like all windows and a pool. And we had a gardener. And it was just like, I felt chic and I was like, this is iconic. And then we would have girls over and get really cool photographers to come around and we would shoot with all these different girls. We would like smoke and drink and just have fun and like sit around and like eat food together and then shoot again. And like, it just felt, I kind of finally felt like I was with my people.
Mm.
Like I met these girls and they were like, just like me, like didn't care about, you know, being tits out, like running around like naked. Like I was like, this is so much more fun than modeling. I don't feel judged. I feel like I can talk to everyone. Like for a period of time, my mum didn't speak to me after I'd done OnlyFans.
And you're very close with your mum.
I'm really close. My mum is my best friend now.
Yeah.
And I think she was just confused and she thought I was kind of having a Britney 2007 meltdown.
Right.
She didn't speak to me. And I spoke to a girl about it on a show. I was like, my mum's not talking to me. She went, oh, my parents didn't speak to me for ages, but then I paid off their mortgage and now they do. And I was like, oh, okay. Like, and my mum and dad did, you know, come. My dad was fine with it the whole time, which is really bizarre because my dad's like 20 years older than my mum. But my mum was really upset. And then she kind of got used to it, you know.
What like is actually on OnlyFans? Like, what content are you actually putting out there?
I've actually quit now. I don't do it anymore.
Yeah, we're going to talk about that.
We'll talk about that. But it honestly, like, it saved my life. I do just want to say, like, OnlyFans saved my life. Like, it did so much for me. But it's a time to quit, I think. But it's generally just, I was posting kind of just, seductive content, I guess. I didn't quite realize like the backlash that I would face. Like I literally got like, canceled from everything. I wasn't allowed at any fashion events. I wasn't allowed, like every brand that was working with me didn't want to work with me. But it's so interesting to me as well. Like that I do feel like I was written off a lot more than other people have been in the past. Like when you think about how Kim Kardashian got famous, it's a lot more X-rated than what I was doing. And she's on the cover of Vogue and doing the Met Gala now. And so why was I cancelled for everything when that was like 20 years after she did that?
How did it feel to have brands?
I didn't know that that was going to happen. I didn't actually think about probably the consequences of my actions doing OnlyFans. I, maybe naive, I thought that it would be fine and every, you know, I'd still get these brand deals and stuff. And I didn't realize quite how shut out I would be. And I think that kind of fueled my depression as well when I got back from America. Because I was only there for a few months living with my friends and then coming back to the UK where there's a lot more. In LA, people are like, yeah, do what you want. If you make money, you know, no one cares. No one cares that you do OnlyFans, no one cares that you do porn. If you're making money, you're making money in LA. People just care if you're rich.
Right.
And successful, you know, whatever you do, it's cool if you're successful.
Yeah.
So coming back here and people being like, ew, you do OnlyFans. Like, British people are a lot more judgmental than out in America, you know? So that was really difficult. And then on top of that, not getting the brands, I think that kind of sent me quite into a depression.
What happened?
That was when I went to rehab after that. That was when it got really bad. I like couldn't leave my bed. I like didn't look at myself in the mirror when I would go to the bathroom or anything. If I walked past the mirror, I like just wouldn't look. I just like couldn't look at myself. I didn't like myself. I didn't like my lifestyle. I didn't like, I was dating a guy who was a complete drug addict. He was also a drug dealer, among definitely other things. I would go around to his house and he would have like machetes around and like knives. And
where did you meet this guy?
He was actually a friend of a friend that I was friends with, and we met up in London. And it was just, I mean, it was at the time, like danger was exciting. You know, I was like, I kind of think it was a cry for help as well. I kind of would introduce him to my friends, hoping that my friends would be like, WTF, like this man is a serial killer.
What sounds really empowering at the beginning is like, you're in this, you've said like, I found my people, I felt empowered, you know, is what I'm getting.
I think moving back to London really, you know, like from the press and things like that, they were like, she's hit rock bottom was one of the headlines. Being discarded from an industry which I once thrived in and was, you know, doing the top things, now not even being invited to like the bottom of the barrel events, you know. And I think it just kind of, I just didn't like myself a lot at that point. The drug abuse had gotten worse when I'd come home. And
what drugs was it for you?
For me, it was always coke that was the worst for me. Yeah, it wasn't really much else. It was just alcohol and coke.
And did it make you regret having done OnlyFans at the time? It did. It
definitely. I regretted it because I kind of thought, wait, have I just like fucked everything up? Like, have I just ruined my life? Am I ever going to come back from this? And then, you know, being with men like that, I thought like, this is it. Like, this is my life now. Like all of those people that I would see, you know, like even like people on the street that, you know, have drug problems clearly and stuff. Like, I was like, that's going to be me one day. Like, that's where I'm going to end up. Like, on the street. Like I just kind of like had come to terms with it. And I don't know what it was. Somehow I managed to like bring it back every time. Like, I was so close to the edge, so close to like running out of money and because I'd spent it all on drugs and alcohol and food and things like that. And then I would always somehow get like a big sum of money and stuff. And that's the security with OnlyFans with that is that you don't have to do much in order to get quite a lot of money. And that's quite dangerous. I was doing the bare minimum. I was barely working and then I was like partying loads, but I was still making quite a lot of money.
How much money?
20 to 30K a month. Like enough to like, sustain yourself.
I mean, it's a lot of money.
Yeah.
I'm so sorry that you like, I just want to give you a hug.
Oh.
I think the feeling of like shame that you get from being an addict, maybe from what the shame that people were making you feel from OnlyFans. I mean, shame is such an intense feeling and one that is so destructive. Mm. When you come back and you are in that sort of rock bottom, how soon do you go to rehab, and was there like a night or a moment that made you kind of go, oh my God, I need to go and get like help?
I had like, I'd been back for like maybe a couple months, like, and from LA. This is when I really realized, I went out with my friends one night, we came back to mine, had an after party, it was like 7 a.m, 8 a.m, classic. And I was in bed with one of my best friends, she's still my best friend to this day, and I just broke down to her. I said, I can't do it anymore. I remember being like, I don't have, because I'd been pretending I was fine. Everyone obviously knew. I thought I was keeping it together. I was right. Like, nobody knows. Nobody knows I'm depressed. No one knows I have a drug problem. And I remember like, I just broke down tired. And I was like, I can't pretend anymore. I have nothing left in me. I was so drained of like everything in the world, and I was trying to help other people, and I just didn't have anything left to give. And she has a sister who has similar problems, and she was like, right, that's it, that you have to go to rehab. And then I think for a week I didn't really, you know, pick it up. And I remember I was in bed one time and I was just crying. My friend was like, called me in tears. She was like, I'm really worried about you. Where are you? And I was like, don't come to my house. I don't really hear. She came to my house. She was like ringing, to the point where I had to open the door because it was so annoying. And like, I had to get out of bed. And I remember I was like in bed with like food all around me, like old food. And like, depression really is like that as well. You don't want to like wash and stuff. And then she came over and she was like, she just sat on the bed and she just like sat there and she just cried. And she was like, I'm so scared. Like, I'm so worried for you. Like, and then she called my parents. I called my parents and I like realized like, yeah, I needed to go. And I was actually, I think at this point I was already scheduled to go, and they called the rehab and they said, we can take her earlier if she needs to come here. And so I drove down like, but I was like willing. I was like happy. And honestly, rehab is a vibe. Like, everyone's super nice to you. I was in a private rehab as well. Yeah. So there was only three of us there. I had one-on-one therapy. It wasn't group.
Yeah.
And yeah, it was great. It did a lot for me. I got to just chat and talk about everything.
What came from it?
Well, because I never spoke about myself before that truth. And never was like open and honest with people about how I felt. I was like, oh, I'm fine. I'm good. And like, what about you? You know? And I was never fully open and honest with people. And I think it really forced me to like look into myself. I still definitely after that, like went back and took drugs. Like I came out of rehab and I went straight to Zoho Farmhouse and ordered a bottle of wine. Like I went straight back to that because they kind of validated me with being like, you only have depression. You're not a drug addict. So I thought like, oh, fine. The drugs aren't the problem.
So when is that?
It was like the 22 or 23.
Right.
Yeah.
So you come out initially feeling better.
Yeah.
But then you get straight back to taking drugs.
Yeah.
Are you still on OnlyFans at this point?
Yes. I was. Yeah.
And then definitely. What happens from there?
It feels like a bit of a blur after that, honestly. Like I like can't even really remember like that those years like then. But it was just like a lot more partying and things like that. And I was a lot better, I will say. I got rid of that guy. More things were like better for me after that.
Did you feel like, because I think OnlyFans has become a lot more, like people know about it. Like, do you know what I mean? Like I didn't know about it a few years ago, but in the last year, I've definitely like most people know what OnlyFans is now. Do you think it's, people are judging it a bit less?
I think there was, and then enter the Bonnie Boo era, and I think she's really
taken it
downhill again.
Yeah,
especially for women who are sex workers, which is really sad actually, because like sex workers genuinely are some of the best people I've ever met.
How do you feel about OnlyFans though? Do you think that it is empowering for all women? Do you think it's empowering for some? What is there another side to it?
I think it depends what reason you're going into it. I think it's helped a lot of women. I know I've read stories about women who haven't been able to get childcare, haven't been able to like go to work and are running out of money. And then finally OnlyFans comes along and it's something that, you know, you can do from your own home. You know, you can pay for your childcare, you can pay for all of this and things like that. And so in that way, I think there's a lot of people doing a lot of good with OnlyFans. But I think I meet a lot of girls that are like, I'd love to do it because you make so much money. I'm like, you shouldn't do it because you make loads of money. You should do it because like, it's something that you find fun. Like any job, like you should do it because you want to do it, not because of that. And you really have to think of the consequences afterwards. Like people will come up to me and be like, I've seen your leaked nudes. Like I've seen, I'm like, cool. Like I edited them myself and I look great. So I think like, I always will have to live with that and that's fine. Like, people coming up to me being like, your kids are gonna see that. And like, when my kids finally do see it one day, I don't think they're gonna be that shocked. I'm gonna raise them to be like they came out of my vagina. They sucked on my tits. Like, I think they've seen me naked. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I don't think they're gonna be shocked to see my naked body online. But if they are, like, that is something that I will have to live with and that they will have to live with. But, you know, I think everyone has a past. And I actually, I'm quite happy that I've tried a lot of different things. Like I've done television, I've done OnlyFans, I've done high fashion modeling. Now I do podcasting. I want to look back at my life and think like, damn, there's nothing I didn't do, is there?
What are the consequences of OnlyFans for anyone that's listening that might be thinking, you know, it is a great way to make money. The ease of money, I think, especially when like we're in a cost of living crisis, is probably appealing to more people. What are the consequences of it?
I think there's a lot of chatter around how much money is made on OnlyFans. I do just want to stress that like the people that are making a lot of money on OnlyFans are people with following, people who have previously been in porn. And it's, if you're like an average Joe, you're probably not making more than £5,000 a month. Which is like still a lot, but like, yeah, you're making like hundreds a week, maybe. So the only times you're making millions and hundreds of thousands is people that have a big TikTok following or Instagram following or have been in porn previously or are famous. So I just want to stress that. But yeah, obviously as well, having your nudes leaked, which does happen, they will never be erased from the internet. There will always be people that have naked pictures of me and these other people. And that is, you know, something that you have to live with, especially with dating.
Does it bother you?
Doesn't bother me. No, I don't care. Like, and I you do get those kind of guys that are like, yeah, but like guys aren't going to want to date you now. Like if you've done something like that, I'm like, cool. I don't want to date guys that would judge me for that anyway. I've dated men since. Like I don't struggle getting dates, you know, and finding people. And every guy that I've been with since I've done it has been fine with it.
Do you think that because of OnlyFans, or that there are men who meet you and then think you're something that you're not? Have you found that difficult?
I've never struggled really with that. But like, yeah, no, I think maybe I've slept with guys that have maybe thought like, oh, she's going to be like crazy in bed. And then I'm like, just get on top. Like, I'm like missionary only, babes. Like, I can't be honest today. They're like, why isn't she a freak in the sheets? Like, because it's funny because like that's the thing with OnlyFans girls and like porn stars. Like I remember I shot with a porn star once, a very famous one. And she was like this like sexy, like, like, you know. And I met her and she was like, hi, it's nice to meet you. Like, my name's so-and-so. Like, really meek, really quiet, really sweet and lovely. And then we got on set and it was like, and I was like, what's going on? Like, and she was like, you know, like rubbing me up and down. And I was like, whoa, like it was so interesting. And that's why I think some people have to realize, especially men. So when you go to that strip club and you think that stripper fell in love with you, she didn't. She's pretending because that's her job. Like, you know, porn is all staged. You know, rarely are they orgasming, you know, rarely are they like really into it. You know what I mean? It's acting for them. It's a job.
How has the whole experience made, do you think at this point, having come out the depression, and I want to ask you why you quit, but how has it made you feel about yourself and your relationships and love and sexuality?
I mean, it's taught me a lot about, like, I think being a woman and, you know, this conversation as well with like how men treat women, especially how people treat, you know, sex workers has taught me a lot. And I think just it's taught me so much about myself as well. And I think I mean, I quit doing it recently because I just don't enjoy it anymore. You know, I enjoyed it for a long time. I had so much fun, but I'm in my late 20s now. You know, I want to build myself a business. I want to come away from that narrative. I think because as well, I'm in the public eye, I get that scrutiny a lot more of like every day on Daily Mail article was like OnlyFans star, OnlyFans star, OnlyFans naked, you know. And I was kind of sick of it. It's just like, do you know what? Like I didn't stop doing it because of the scrutiny, but like that just, it didn't help, you know, seeing articles, headlines about myself. Oh, she's disgusting. And, you know, her family is this and, you know, negative things. Like, what do you think people are going to do? Like, what would you think if you saw that about yourself? Like genuinely, like to any journalist listening, promoting that kind of like negative thing, as we have seen in the past with people like Caroline Flack. How do you think that that's going to turn out? Like when I saw these articles about myself, like, and it was just before I went to rehab and I was seeing these ones about, I didn't realize I put out, you know, this OnlyFans live of me smoking a joint with my tits out. The Daily Mail put it up. And that was when I was like, my career is dead. Like I will never get a job again. That is, I will never like be anything again. Like I'm nothing now. And it was constant. I still get the Daily Mail writing so much about me. And everything is like this negative, like cokehead, been to rehab, you know, slutty OnlyFans. Like it's just so negative and disgusting and degrading. And they're lucky, like now I just don't care. Like, cool, like, but you know, I don't read the comments anymore because it is, you know,
no.
If you're on the Daily Mail writing comments about other people or writing things about other people in general online, you're a loser. Get a life. It's sad.
I can't imagine how horrible it is. And I am genuinely, and I can, you know, I can hear the pain that it's put you through. Yeah. And it's not nice and it's not fair.
It's not something that I should have had to get used to, but now I am used to it. But it is quite nice now knowing that like everything is out there. Like there's nothing that they could come up with that hasn't already been written. Like, you know, so yeah.
How actually are you now?
I'm actually so good now. Like, it's weird to say because I like never thought I would be this good, but I'm so happy now. I'm in such a good place. And I moved to Premier, my now modeling agency, and they have just been like amazing. Like, I'm like going to cry. but like, they've saved my life. Like, my current agent, he's sat in the other room. She has like instilled faith in me that like I like really lost for myself. Like I didn't think like there was any possibility of me like making it out of like that like, you know, narrative of myself. And like, she's really like pushing me and being like, no, you like, though you are amazing. And like, you're going to do so well. And there's so much out there for you. There are people that believe in you. And she's just been like so helpful. And I have only amazing people around me. I've stopped dating horrible men, you know? And yeah, I just like, I never thought I could like be this happy, honestly.
Aww.
So yeah.
I'm so happy for you. What do you think that you wish people sort of knew about you or could see you for?
I am just like a genuinely like just nice open person. Like, there is honestly, like, obviously I've done bad things, you know, I'm not like an angel, but you know, I am who I am. Like,
you are open, you are authentic, and you're not doing you're not intending harm on anyone.
I don't change my personality for anyone. I could be around Anna Wintour and I'd still talk like this. Like, I would be like,
right.
Like, do you know what I mean? Like, I just would never not be myself now.
Yeah.
I spent so long like hiding who I was because I'm just being true to myself.
Yeah.
You know?
Good, you deserve it.
Thank you.
Let's talk quickly about body image. What has your relationship been like with your body image and how did it change showing yourself naked on the internet, you know?
I think that was quite empowering, actually. Yeah. I think I was just like, you know what? Because OnlyFans is funny. Like, when you look at what people write, because it's kind of like Instagram in the way that you message back and forth.
Right.
So it's like you have your own page and then people subscribe and then they can actually chat to you one-on-one.
Right.
And like, people are so nice. Like, there's no one that pays like that much money for those kind of images and things like that to say nasty things. It's probably the nicest platform in social media. Like, it's the people on there are like, you're so hot, you're so nice, I love you. Like, you know what I mean? I'm just like, I'm saying they're like, oh my God. Like, it really instilled that back in me that I was like, I'm sexy. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And, you know, shooting with other girls and then being like, oh my God, you look hot in that picture. You look so good there. Like, you know, that really instilled a lot of faith back in me. Like, I've always had a bit of a problem with food, like in terms of not, it's not the fact that I don't eat. I eat too much. Like, I love food. And my mum was always just like, you know, eating healthy, but like, eat what you want. Never like, oh, I can't eat that. She always wanted to make sure that I had a good relationship with food. And I did. But I think during COVID, I put on a lot of weight. I was like, I was smoking that green. I was making brownies. I was like, I was very much doing that. So when I did all of that and after COVID came out, I came out of, you know, sort of hiding. I was at my sister's house and came back to London. I was like, my friend was like, baby, I love you, but we need to put like the pies down for once. Like, it was, and it was in a nice way and I would have wanted her to do it. Do you know what I mean? But I was a lot bigger. Like, I was like maybe like 10 to 15 kilos heavier than I am now, which is a lot. And I then went on Ozempic.
What was that like? As we all know,
and that didn't end very well.
Tell us for those who don't know.
So I went on Ozempic. I didn't know the like strength of what I was taking. I'd been given it by a doctor who hadn't taken my blood pressure, hadn't done all that. And I was taking an amount for someone who's double the size of me.
Right.
So I went to A&E. And when
why were you in A&E? What was happening?
I was really sick.
Right.
I couldn't hold anything down. No water, no liquids, no food. I was throwing up loads. And I just felt sick all the time but like really nauseous. And so I called my friend, she was at a party. It was like 2 a.m. I was like, really don't feel good. Something's not right. She was like, right, I'm coming. She was like, still a little bit drunk, but she was like, I'm coming, babes. she took me to A&E. It was like 2 a.m. We were there till 6 a.m. I went in and saw a doctor and she said, right, so what's happened? I explained the whole story. I said, this is how much I've taken. This is the milligrams. She was like, right. And then while I was sat there, I was like, God, I really don't feel right. And as soon as they wheeled me in, I had a seizure. And it was crazy because they didn't actually know I was having a seizure, even though like my whole body tensed up. It's like this really scary thing to have a seizure. I don't know.
Has that ever happened to you before?
Never had a seizure before in my life.
What was it like?
It like your whole body basically tenses up.
Right.
It's basically your body like being like, right, this is bad. We're in like, it's like SOS, SOS, like red alert. And my whole body shut down. And like, I was, you tense so hard that you kind of like start to like dig your nails into your hands. You like your whole body, like your legs are seizing. You're like shaking. I couldn't talk properly. So I was trying to tell them, but I couldn't speak. My whole body, my whole face was tensed up and it was like slurring my words. It feels like you're like having a stroke. It was really horrible. And my friend was having to hold my legs and then they put me on a drip and the seizure went away. But it was really scary. And after that, I was just kind of like, fuck this.
Let's talk a little bit about healing. Do you feel like you are on that journey and what has been helpful for you?
I'm definitely on the journey. I think it's slow. And this is what people don't realize is like, healing, especially like in your early, like everything from your early 20s, because your early 20s always, for everyone is kind of chaotic. But I think healing is such a long process. You're never like, no one is ever fully healed. There's always something and there's always new things that happen in your life that you need to heal from. And, you know, it's a journey, but I think just being like kind to yourself, being grateful has really been helpful for me. Like remembering to be grateful and sit there every day and be like, wow. Like sometimes I would just look around my house and be like, I can't believe like that I have like this nice of a place. And, you know, I have such good friends. Yeah, I just feel grateful, I think. Yeah,
I love that.
Therapy also.
Oh, God. But I just, do you know what? I surprisingly had never really had much therapy, even though I really like advocate for therapy. But I just found a new therapist that actually Paul Brunson recommended to me. I'll go in feeling like, I'm good. Like, I don't need anything. But then you find something
you unlock
to work
something
on.
That
it's
you
so
had
good.
No idea.
Yeah.
And sometimes like even just speaking to the therapist, you unlock it with just talking
totally.
To them.
Totally. But then do you find I've definitely become that person where every time I speak to my friends, I'm like, well, my therapist said, yeah. And I'm like, oh my God, shut up. Stop saying that. You've spoken about working on not being triggered by others. What has helped you move from comparison to compassion?
I think because I have learned to love myself a lot more, that I don't compare myself as much to others. Mm-hmm. I'm a lot kinder now to everyone. That was a period of my life where, because I didn't like myself, I wasn't very nice to other people. And now I've learned to like that part of my brain to like kind of be like, no, let's, you know, they might be going through something. There's always ways to speak to people a lot kinder as well. I think I found like my inner child and kind of healed a part of myself where it's okay to be vulnerable. It's okay to be kind and sweet. And I was always like that when I was a kid. I was always just like nice and sweet. And I became very hard shelled and I was built a wall. And I was very, you know, if someone would say something like constructive to me, I was like, no, I'd snap back.
Yeah.
And now I'm just like, okay. Like I feel so much more at peace. You know,
it's kind of amazing. A lot of my community are aged 35 to 55. That's like the majority of my audience. So they are quite a bit older than you. And I think they'll be shocked as I am that like at 27, it feels like you've lived so many lives.
Yeah.
And I definitely think you've always seemed like older than your years, but you are still, there is still so much
that's
ahead of you.
Says,
you're
I'm
about
like,
to have your Saturn return.
I feel like,
returns.
Oh my God, I feel like I need to like be married with kids at this point. So I feel like I'm like
God,
older.
No.
But I have been around a lot of older people my whole life. And it's funny because like my friends who are like 35, they're like, baby, you are so young. Yeah. Like you're good. But I wanted to actually speak to you quickly about something. I'm going to roll to reverse.
Go for it.
Because you said in your book about being 27 was when you realized and you really like turned your life around. Mm. What? Because I had that and I feel right, like I'm 27 now and I felt a massive shift in my life with everything. My brain works differently. The things I care about are different. My priorities have changed. What happened in your 27th year that really like helped you? Like to, what was that? Because they say it's a Saturn return.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So there was definitely, I suppose, that rock bottom. So I had come back from Thailand and I'd thought that I was going to like change my life on this yoga teacher training course and stop drinking. And I came back and I went on essentially like a 48-hour bender. And I went home with these two much older guys. I ended up sleeping with another guy. I was on my own at my house doing it in the in-between in the afternoon. I was at the hairdresser snorting lines of coke in the bathroom. Like it was so bad. And after that, I woke up. I mean, the shame, it was so horrendous. And then I remember 2 days later, it was Harry and Meghan's royal wedding. And I went to go watch it at my friend's house down the road and I'd invited some other friends over. And it was at like 11 a.m. and I was on my own in the bathroom doing coke. And I was like, I'm really fucking lost here. And I think that was such a dark time. And actually, I don't really share all of this, but then I went to Ibiza and basically went on like an 8-day bender. And I mean, it was so dark. I ended up at this like drug dealer's house that I thought I was going to fall in love with. I mean, it was just so dark. And then I discovered manifestation and then I met Wade. And Wade was the complete opposite of my life. He had never taken drugs. He found joy in the everyday. He was just happy with like life's simple pleasures. And it was, and he gave me this sense of like safety that I had never experienced before. I remember just feeling like I was at home with him. And that's when I began my journey to healing. And I remember I started meditating, just brainwashing myself with like self-help and all of that. But I was still doing drugs. So I wasn't, suddenly I gave up, but I was at least on the journey and I was talking to Wade about it. Yeah. So there was like less. And then I remember,
'cause I don't think people that do like a lot of drugs in the way that we did can do that transition smoothly of like, right, let's quit.
Yeah.
I think people that do that, I'm like, good on you, but I don't know.
I think it's a different experience for everyone. And I think for some people, like they have to do that. I think I was definitely like wanted to do it myself, kept sort of relapsing, then found out I was pregnant. And so
that'll
then, and that was the hardest thing about falling pregnant was not being able to do coke.
Really?
Oh my God, it was torture.
Was it?
I was so...
Because I bet you'd never, you know, since you started doing drugs, never taken that amount of time.
It was really, really torture for me.
Really?
Yeah. And then all the depression came out. So it wasn't like it was like plain sailing, but I was in such darkness that I knew that the only way out was forward. Like, I had to change my life. And when I was having Wolf, I was pregnant. I mean, I didn't have any money. Wade had no money. Like, I didn't know what I was doing with my life. I was so fucking unhappy. I hated myself, like, with such vile, like, oh, just wanted to rip my skin off. Like, you know, it was so dark that I was like, when I have this...
You don't want to exist,
no,
is it?
Literally.
You just don't want to be here.
You're like, what's the point?
Yeah.
And so I think I made this vow to myself that like, when I have this baby, I will make my life the best it can be. And sometimes running away from pain can be like the most powerful and motivating thing. Mm. And I think that I remember 6 months into the journey thinking, I'm healed.
Yeah.
Like I'm good. And you're fucking not. Yeah. You're not even close.
Yeah.
It is such a long an amazing journey. And even though it's long, and I often say this, I'm like, you know, when people used to be like, healing's a lifelong journey, I'd be like, well, what's the fucking point?
Yeah.
Right? But then you realize that like every time you heal something, you understand something about yourself, you do unlock this new level of happiness.
Yeah. Sometimes, and I think that's maybe where me and you were, when we were so used to that feeling that we didn't realize like there was another side.
Yeah.
And slowly you do start to realize like, why would I want to feel like that when I can feel like this?
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, exactly.
Why would I want to inflict that pain on myself?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Exactly. And I really feel like, and I don't mean this in any way, I don't mean this in a patronizing way, but I feel like I'm so happy to hear you are in a good place, but this is just the beginning for you. Like I really feel
I feel it too, though. I really feel like it's only up from here.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's got to be. It couldn't get any worse than what it was. So, but I think it is that thing of like, we hit rock bottom and I think we thought, do you know what? if there's any time, it's now, because it can't get any worse than this.
Absolutely.
Like, and it's kind of like freeing to actually hit rock bottom.
Oh my God,
yeah. Yeah, you're like, well, this is it.
Absolutely.
I'm here.
Like, I got nothing to lose.
Yeah, exactly.
And you know, I think it builds something in you that like you can't see, which is resilience.
Yes.
And it builds like a strength and a sense of gratitude for being happy. Like every day I'm like, oh my God, I'm so grateful just to not hate myself.
Yeah.
And I'm so grateful to be happy. And you do, you appreciate life, I think, on such a deep level because you know how dark it can be. So I think
also for you, like having a child where it's the time in your life where you have to not care about yourself as much as you care about something else. But you stop thinking so much about yourself and being quite selfish, selfish, you know.
It
puts life in perspective. And I've seen so many people and it's changed for the better. It's really crazy. I have a lot of friends that have had kids. I'm like, you will just seem like the best version of yourself now.
Yeah, it's true. You have a new podcast, well, not new anymore. Yeah. You have your podcast Dream On. Tell us a little bit about it.
It really gave me so much like inspiration back, because at that point I was like still doing OnlyFans, but I wasn't really doing anything else. And it's just been such a joy to do. And I had some amazing guests on. And, you know, we recently just went to Bloodfest with Young Blood. Dom was kind enough to let me interview some of his artists that he had at the festival. And, you know, just seeing the love as well. Like, I run into so many girls that are like, I love your podcast. And don't stop doing it. Yeah, I really enjoy doing it. I love talking, as you can probably tell.
I love it. Give me a few life lessons you think you have learned that you want to share with people listening.
Gosh, that is deep, isn't it?
Yeah.
I think my biggest one is don't give up. Like, if anyone is out there listening to this and is just in a really dark place, like, it gets better. It does. It really does. Just like hold on for dear life with that one last strand of like, you know, hope that you have left. Like, hold on, because it does. Like, life will be kind to you, but you have to be kind to yourself first is another big lesson.
Oh, I love that.
Have patience with yourself. Just like, I was so hard on myself for such a long time. Just like, be nice to yourself. Like, really, like, it's so important. Like, you know, we all struggle and we all go through things, but there is light at the end of the tunnel. And you know, I think sometimes the universe needs to give you some lessons to help you to realize. And I think I remember, like, I kept dating the same guy and I kept getting the same results.
Yeah.
And it was like the universe like testing me, being like, right, I'm going to throw another one at you, but you need to reject this one. And keep going back. And then finally, it clicked in my head. I literally cannot be treated like that again. Like, I actually can't. And then after that, I started rejecting those kind of guys. And now, like, if I see one red flag, you're out.
Yeah.
You're done. Your trial is over.
I have another question for you. Sorry, and I forgot to ask earlier. Talk to me about the face tattoo. What happened?
I mean, if it wasn't obvious I had mental illness before, I think it was after that. I was in Bali. And same as you, when you went to Thailand, I thought, this is going to change my life.
Right.
And then I got drunk one night and I was on a first date with a guy and he was like, do you want to go to a tattoo parlor? And obviously me already tatted up. I was like, yeah, sure. Got there and everyone else was getting like breathe, heal, you know, written on their arm in like really tiny writing. And I was like, stick it on my face. And I wanted to say lover. And they were giving me like moonshine at the tattoo parlor.
What's that?
Like, they make their own alcohol. And they were giving that to me while I was getting the tattoo done.
Did anyone try and talk you out of it?
No.
God.
Truly, the tattoo artists were like, put it up here. They were like, do you like Post Malone? I'm like, they had me gagged. They saw me and they were like, this British tourist is going to like, they're going to laugh about it tomorrow morning. And I didn't mind it when I broke up with it. I was like, it's kind of hot.
Right.
And I get mixed reviews about it as well. Some people were like, love it, it's so hot. A lot of guys think it's really hot. Like, they're like so fit. But like, for me, I actually had a brand deal with a huge company for a concealer advert. And they confirmed me that day.
No.
And they found out about the face tat and they said no. And my agent tried to sell it to them and be like, oh no, but you can show how good the concealer is. And obviously they declined.
Can't really see it.
I know, we're almost done. It's one more session and then I'm good. Should be gone. So.
Wow. Do you know what? I just had to ask, because I was like, when I saw that, I was like, that is bold.
It was
that is a bold move.
It was a decision I made. Yeah.
Lottie, my final question is, what does rising mean to you?
I feel like I've been rising from the ashes a little bit. I feel like I kind of was burnt out and I was so, you know, at the bottom of the barrel in my life. And it was so depressed, so unhappy. And then I kind of found the light at the end of the tunnel. And now I feel like I'm a woman rising.
Absolutely. Honestly, thank you so much. Thank you for your openness and for
thank
being
for
so honest.
On. It's been amazing to speak to you. Such a big fan of you anyway with your books.
Oh, I love how able you are to just keep standing in your power and in your authenticity. And you deserve to really experience true safe love.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for listening to that episode with Lottie. I was so grateful for her for being so open, so vulnerable. What a life she's already had. And I think this is really just the beginning of her. And I'm so glad that anybody who might have judged some of her decisions she's made in the past got to see another side of her. And she is just a girl trying her best and trying to be her best and find self-love and love like so many of us are. If you enjoyed the episode, please do rate, subscribe, follow the show. It really does mean a lot. I'll see you on Thursday. We've got our solo episodes every Thursday and we are back every Monday with a new interview. Until then, keep rising.